Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
So we enter into the sacred space that's always waiting for us. And we consciously breathe into that sacred space. And our soul affirms that I have arrived, I am home. In the heart of the one that knows no other. In the life of the one that knows it's everything. And so on this Mother's Day, we open to the Divine Mother. In the Unity tradition, they call it Father, Mother, God. And when I heard that for the first time, I was a little startled, but now it feels so right. If we can call God the Father, well, we can also call it God the Mother. And then we have an intimate relationship with this androgynous creative presence that has yin-yang qualities, and we are both. We have the divine masculine, and we are also the divine feminine. And in that union, we find our wholeness. We find our courage and our strength. We also find our vulnerability. And in that vulnerability, we find extra strength. And so it's not either or, but it's both and. And so on this Mother's Day Sunday, we are going to explore a conversation with life, a conversation that is always happening. Are we listening? And in that listening, are we able to respond courageously? And so with playful attentiveness and curiosity, we enter into this space today, ready to experience something that is truly sacred. In this month of May, I've decided to explore a theme, and the theme is navigating the tides of change, because change is something that we can't avoid in this life that we have. But the question is, how well do we navigate those changes? It is said that you cannot stop the winds of change from blowing, but you can learn to set sail. So perhaps what that sail metaphorically means is an intention to show up for the moment and not make the moment bad or troublesome, but the moment is rich with possibility and potential if we can access that with a willingness to know that it's all here for us. So beloved, come on in. Happy Mother's Day. I shared with the revealing service this morning that when Jan and I went to the Parliament of the World Religions in 1999, the very first person I heard speak was a woman who had lost all five of her children to AIDS. She was an African woman. And she said, "They are all our children and we are all the mother." And in that heart-wrenching declaration from this woman, I saw things differently. I didn't see them as other people's children. I saw them as all my children. And if we are all the mother, well, then where does your responsibility lie to your children? Is it the child across the street that maybe doesn't have a bicycle? Or is it the neighbor lady across the street that feels abandoned by her family? And even though she's in her 80s, I see a little girl across the street when she cries about her garden. And she says, David, why are the rabbits eating my hostas? And I said, you must have mighty tasty hostas. That's all I can say. And then, of course, I reminded her that she was the one that saved the baby rabbits when the guy that was mowing the yard found that he went over the nest. And so she's went out of her way to save the baby rabbits. And now they've chosen to imprint mama onto her, and they're eating her hostas. I mean, such is the nature of life, that all it asks and all it wants is the opportunity to appear. And you are that opportunity, and so am I. And it's the purpose of this wonderful teaching to reveal whatever that is in this lifetime. So what if that is the role of mother and the role of father, to cultivate the soul of their child so that it might flower into the body of our experience? On my Zen calendar this morning, it brought me to a laugh because the statement for a gardener was kind of shocking, Miss Sylvia. It said, the seed never sees the flower.
Well, what do you think that means?
So what if we are the seed potential of divine grace, but we're not given the privilege of knowing what that flower is going to look like? And if you're as crazy as I am and you love not knowing, I threw out all these seeds that was given to me at Garvin's Feed and Seed. Everything is growing and I don't know what it is. And so I have to wait on bated breath for it to actually blossom. So in one of the planters, this gray thing is starting to grow and it shot up these flower buds and it opened. And what do you think I have growing in my pot by the pathway in the garden? These enormous red, purple, orange poppies that are so outrageously beautiful. They've got to be illegal, but I'm just in awe. Oh my God. And so I'm nurturing them and tending them, and I'm planning to keep some seeds so that I can give you all some of those seeds because they're gorgeous. Now, what if we don't get to know how our flower is going to look like in life? But we do know that there is this God seed within us. And then I hear Jean Houston, the amazing futurist, and she coined a phrase called entelechy. And she said, just like an acorn knows how to be an oak tree and a pear seed knows how to be a pear tree, she said, a God seed knows how to be a God. And so she says, we have the God seed inherent within us. Could we nurture that and foster that so that it might flower into the body of our experience? You know, in religious science, we teach one simple premise, and Einstein said it. There's two kinds of people in this world, those who believe there are two and those who don't. Now, we're the ones who don't. And if there isn't two, well, then what is there? There's only one. There's only one life. That life is spirit's life. It unfolds in multiplicity. And then you hear this lady from Oxford, England, who has a PhD in quantum mechanics, who wrote a book called The Story of Gaia. Michael, you have to read it. But she talks from a physicist, from a scientific perspective, and she talks about not the Big Bang as the creation of the universe, but the exhale of Brahman. Now, isn't that a benign way of thinking it? That Brahman exhaled and all of this came into creation. And so she talks as a very scientific way that there are three phases to the evolution of consciousness. It starts off in unity consciousness. There's only one here. Then it moves into a unity and diversity. We say, oh, there's all these many pieces of the puzzle. But the trap is to think you're separate. It's unity in diversity. But then she says the third phase, and she calls it the Trinity of Being, is when unity wakes up in the seeming separate self, and you're looking through the eyes of unity. You're no longer identifying as me. And then she coins this beautiful phrase, you evolve from the me to the we, and ultimately arrive at the all. It's all you. It's all the one. And then you can ask these crazy questions. Am I listening to the voice of the world when she's speaking? The universe never stopped talking. Are we really listening to it? When it's moving us ahead, when it's having us make those critical shifts, was a very emotional revealing service this morning. And what I saw was how many people have embraced the changes that life has been offering them. And sometimes those changes can be painful. Maybe it means that a marriage has to end and that you get to raise your children by yourself. Anybody been a single parent raising their kids? More normal than not. And so what if it's not about living in the idea that your ancestors gave you? When I grew up, it was considered a shame to be a divorced woman. My mother said they're called grass widows, so my parents would never get divorced. And when people did have the courage to get divorced, oftentimes they were shunned by their family because it wasn't acceptable in the olden days.
You know, you marry till death do you part.
Oh, gosh.
Not anymore. So what if part of this dance called life is that we're willing to evolve and grow and think for ourselves? When I came home from church last Sunday, there are no accidents. Trey made lunch. No, he didn't, because it was breaking bread Sunday. He was napping. So I went in the living room. I sat down. I was exhausted, but I wasn't ready to take a nap. And Inherit the Wind was on. That wonderful play about the Scopes trial right up here in Tennessee. You need to make a little trip up to Tennessee. And when I heard Spencer Tracy and Frederick March having that famous debate, Spencer Tracy said, this isn't about whether you're going to teach evolution in schools. This is whether you are going to allow people to think for themselves. So what was on trial in Inherit the Wind was Frederick March preaching a gospel of the Bible says that Adam and Eve started, that the earth is 6,000 years old, that original sin, and then Jesus came, and that's the old gospel from the old time religion. And the alternative was, could we be so controversial to teach science in the schools? That we have evolved as a species, that there are physical laws and spiritual laws that operate simultaneously. So what I witnessed in this movie was an invitation to think for ourselves when so much of the world does not want to think for themselves. We have a revolutionary teacher in Dr. Ernest Holmes, and he came at a time when we were surrounded by ignorance in this country. I so admire what he did. And he had a series of lectures in 1934. They were compiled later on into a little book called Can We Talk to God? And these are Ernest's old lectures. And I pulled them out yesterday because we just finished this thing called You. And this guy is standing on his soapbox saying that we've got to get rid of the old idea of God and we have to learn how to talk to God. Now, I would add to that, we have to learn how to listen to God. It never stopped talking. So here's a taste of how he puts it. He says, I believe the relationship between God and humankind is hidden within us. And when we discover a new truth, or have a better understanding about the old truth, Jesus, it's not about the man Jesus, it's about the Christ consciousness. It's about the universal Christ that he came to example. And so we're all over the city there, you know, singing to songs to him. No, it wasn't about him. It was about what he was pointing toward. My teacher Kennedy said Jesus came 2,000 years ago to point to the truth. And for 2,000 years, we've been worshiping his finger. It's not about him. It's about the truth. So he says, get a new idea around these old truths. And it is really more of this infinite mind revealing itself through us endlessly anew. An infinite mind, an infinite soul. A divine love, you know, and it really goes back into love. Because I found that the creative intelligence of the universe doesn't think thoughts. Yes, it operates on thoughts. We have a little tape in the classroom. It's called The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. And here's a scientist who took the teachings of science of mind and exposed us to the idea that thoughts affect your cellular fiber. Your emotions affect you. And this is a scientific thing. So could we heal our subconscious? His whole premise in The Biology of Belief is you've got to excavate your subconscious mind and find out what's operating in you. Because if you're operating from a bunch of distorted ideas, you're going to manifest those distorted experiences in your life. But if you can purge the lens of your perception and begin to see as God sees, well, then problems aren't problems. They're really opportunities for a greater awareness. Holmes is talking to that too. So he says, I believe in a direct communication between spirit and the individual with one universal spirit. Well, then he makes a whole book, lecture after lecture. I'm going to skip over. He says, God operates through what we call the law of evolution. Now, Ernest Holmes was greatly inspired by so many awakened teachers, and one of them was a man named Sri Aurobindo. To the very end of his life, he was devoted to his teachings. And Sri Aurobindo coined a phrase called involution and evolution, to which Holmes built a spiritual teaching around it. We are evolving through an expansion of our consciousness from within. And so here's how he puts this evolution. This is an evolution and an unfoldment, and we are subject to this law. You're not going to escape this evolution. It's funny, in the book, The Story of Gaia Michael, she talks about how science, so much of it is based on entropy, things collapsing, systems collapsing. But science now is looking toward a thing called entropy, which is the expansion of awareness within creation. So entropy is trumping entropy. So could we shift the way we see things, even as a scientist? And what's so great in The Story of Gaia, she said it's all about consciousness. It's always been about consciousness. So do we have the consciousness of oneness and wholeness and the perception that will make it manifest in unique ways? It is not a limitation. This is the way through which freedom and individuality of the soul express. The individuality of the soul. There is an unfolding principle within us which is ever carrying us forward into greater and greater expressions of freedom, love, joy, and life. We are a work in progress, Miss Emily, forever and ever expanding. You didn't stop at just being a school teacher teaching music. Now you're doing singing bowls and you're healing the planet with energy, and there's something even greater that you can't even imagine. Now, are you ready for that evolutionary thrust? She's nodding her head. Are you all ready for that evolutionary thrust? It means you're going to have to let go of something that you've held on to, that comfort zone, that safety zone, which is more like a grave. Someone said, you know the difference between a ditch and a grave? Merely the dimensions. Oh. So from the fullness of a joyous heart, Ernest Holmes said, we should speak our truth. From the fullness of a joyous heart, we should speak truth. Now, I flash on Emerson, who was asked, what is prayer? And Ralph Waldo Emerson in the 1840s said, prayer is simply the contemplation of the facts of life with a jubilant and beholden heart. Now, isn't that a sweet way of talking about prayer? You meet what is, you move into the heart space, and you give thanks for it. A jubilant and beholden heart. I am grateful for this pile of you-know-what that's fallen into my lap because it's my doorway to liberation. It's not my punishment from the universe. It never has been a punishment from the universe. Two men looked out of a prison cell. One saw stars, the other saw mud. What are you seeing? And you know, we all have a prison cell that we live in. It's called our consciousness, our egoic consciousness, that sometimes creates a prison of belief systems until we don't want to be bound anymore. We want to live in a free sort of way that's unlimited. He goes on to say, I believe the spirit is in the wind, Miss Cindy, and it's in the waves, and manifest its presence throughout all of nature. So I say, go lie down in nature and feel her love. But most completely, it's through our own minds and our own hearts, and it proclaims our livingness through its lovingness. Isn't that sweet? It proclaims its livingness through our lovingness. So this isn't just a cold, impersonal law, spiritual law. This is a loving energy that we get to discover endlessly anew. So can you feel that love within your hearts? He said it's an ongoing conversation. So could we tell this universe, teach me and show me the way, how to be a kinder person, how to be a more expansive individual, how to let not my will but thy will be done? Could we surrender to something so much greater than our heretofore strong-held belief systems about what life should look like? Come on in, beautiful. Oh, my darling. That's my baby girl. Good to see you.
I guess I can't sneak in here.
No, you can't. No, you can't. Not with that kind of light shining. So what Ralph Waldo Emerson was pointing to was the life of a contemplative monk. A contemplative monk like Richard Rohr and Anthony DeMillo is someone who faces every moment of life and sees the grace of God in that moment. And so I pulled out my little book called Wellsprings, which are just exercises that Anthony DeMillo put forth for us to have a conversation with the universe. And he does it in such an organic way. You're going to love this, Cindy, because it's all about nature, because nature is speaking to him. So if you want to have a conversation with God, go for a walk in the forest. This is what he's saying. He calls this the eternal conversation with life. He calls it the Bible of the universe. Now, here's a priest saying it's the universe is the Bible. It's not that book that was written years ago. He said, I become conscious of my breathing and of the sensations within my body because this will bring me to a place of silence. Now, the key is to find that silence. So when we ring the bell, we consciously breathe. Sometimes there is an emotion. We meet that emotion. We contemplate it with a jubilant, a beholden heart. It's Mother's Day this Sunday. People are grieving their mothers. I could feel the collective grief in the circle. When I came into the service, I saw my mother's photograph in my office. It was the very photograph that was on her coffin the day I did her memorial service. So when I look at that photograph, I see my mother speaking to me, not from the coffin, but from the heart that never died. And this lovely lady, Eliza, came to our revealing service, and she said she lost her father when she was a young girl. But when her mother died recently, she says, my father graduated when I was 10, but my mother graduated when she was 88. And she says, now I know that my father was always with me because my mother is always with me. And it took her leaving at 88 for me to know that he was there even when I didn't know it then. So that's that place of silence. It'll give you that place of silence. And with that, God's revealing word is only understood within the silence. Here's a priest, a monk. God's revealing word, this conversation takes place in the silence. And then you hear Eckhart Tolle. He says, silence is the language of God. Everything else is a poor translation. And so what I've discovered is when I get silent through meditation or through gardening, it's simple acts, in the silence, the knower abides. Not David the thinker, not the planner, not the one who has all these intentions for the universe and figured it all out. No, no. In the silence, there is a knowing. It's just there. And I can just rest in that knowing. They have the Gnostic Gospels. Gnostic means there's a knowing, a knower within you. Could we find it in the silence? He's pointing to that. So he says, I look at nature that's all around me. There are the trees, the birds, the animals, the sky, on this gentle earth, our mother. I think of nature in her varying moods, in the freshness of the morning, or in the heat of the afternoon, or at sunset when the colors turn vivid, or in the dead of night when I can see the stars through the darkness. I see her speedily in her constant movements, her ever-changing seasons of the year, the rise and fall of life and death, and the beauty even with her violence. We had some really cold spells this winter, and a lot of my plants took the hit. And it's so funny, walking around, I can either focus on the dead in the garden, or I can focus on the life that's emerging through the dead. And I've chosen the latter, because truly, life springs eternal. There's a tree outside the door of the classroom. It's a citrus tree. In fact, it's a grapefruit tree. And it came from a seed that I put in the ground, a grapefruit seed that became a grapefruit tree. She's rather compromised, but we carry her out in the summertime, and I noticed there was all this dead on her. So this morning, I'm trimming off the dead, and then I'm noticing in that one little branch on the right, there's a little bit of life coming in. Oh, I see you, there's a little bit of life. And so I talk to the life. Trace said, I hope you don't do that outside so people can hear you. I said, sometimes they do. I see her in her constant movement, in her beauty, and even in her violence. And I ask Mother Nature, what are you saying to me through your actions, my beloved? What message are you giving me that I can look at today? What if we could see nature as a mute gospel, as Emerson called it, that it's got a message for us? We used to do Earth Day, and Michael would bang the drum, and we'd go up on Monte Sanau, and we'd all go for a walk in nature, and we'd lie on the earth, and we'd all come back with something that we had found that spoke to us. And it was always amazing to hear how a flower would awaken something in someone, a rock would awaken something in another person, a branch would awaken something. So could we have that communion, that conversation with life that's all around us? He's asking us to do that. He says, I wait for God's reply. I don't need an instant answer, Miss Cindy. I wait for God's reply. And it may come in a word, it may come in a sentence, or it may come in an image. Phil did a beautiful treatment at the revealing service, and he likened the flexibility of life to the grass blowing in the wind. So an image came through him, and that impregnated me with this idea that the universe is fluid, it's not fixed. So could I relate to a fluid reality, not some kind of concretized way of looking at things? It may come in a word, in a sentence, in an image, or in the silence that instructs my heart beyond all words. A silence that instructs my heart beyond all words. He said, if it fails to come, well, then I ask the trees to tell me. Does he sound crazy? He's talking to the trees. I ask the trees to tell me, or I ask the birds or the stars or the rivers, whatever part of nature that I happen to be looking at, teach me and show me the way. Do I need to be a little more flexible? Do I need a little more inclusivity? You know, it's so funny. Phil was talking about an alligator in his pond. Trey and I were walking through Maple Hill Cemetery just the other day, and we saw what we thought was either a fox or a coyote chasing a rabbit through the cemetery. Now, as sad as the rabbit's fate may be, that coyote or wolf had a mission to feed itself. So we took our judgment and we left the graveyard, and what do you think was in the street right outside? There was a vulture eating off a squirrel that had been roadkill. So now the vulture was cleaning off the street. You can see him as cleaning the squirrel off the street, or you can see him as this nasty predator. It's all perception. Cleanse the lens. So he says, I look at human history. Boys, there are a lot to look at. Last night on the news, they showed a thing in Ukraine where people coming from all over America to help the orphans in Ukraine. They say mothers will take their kids and put them on a bus and send them to somewhere safe. And so these well-meaning Americans are over there bringing toys to these children. And this woman said, I am a mother and these are all my children. Just because they're Ukrainian children doesn't mean they're inferior to our children. So she spends her time nurturing them. I look at human history. Whatever I recall of it, from the Stone Age to the times we live in, to the rise and fall of nations and cultures, to peace and war, people good and bad. And as I look at our past, I wait again for this divine word to speak to me in the silence. Trey subscribes to a magazine called The New Yorker Magazine, and they have some of the best articles you can find on the planet. And there was this recent article that he was reading to me about a young man who survived the AIDS crisis in the 80s in New York City. And I lived through that AIDS crisis in Atlanta during the 80s. And as I'm reading his tale of woe, I realized, oh my God, I survived a time in our country when we were being condemned. We weren't allowed to be visible. And we survived that. And just to look back on the history, it's like never again. Trey wanted to watch an IVG movie, and so he found this movie called A Man Called Otto. It's on Netflix now. We watched it last night. And it's a story of a man, it's a true story of a man who's desperate because his wife died suddenly and he wants to take his life. And so because he wants to be with her. But the irony was is she never left him. She was always with him. And so there's a young man on his bicycle throwing flyers in the yard, and he gets so reactionary. He picks up the flyers and takes them to the recycling bin. And this young man is throwing, he said, would you stop throwing those recyclers? And he said, oh, Mr. Anderson, he said, I knew your wife. She was my teacher. And where all the other teachers condemned me because I'm a trans, she accepted me and loved me. So here I saw someone ready to condemn him for throwing the flyers in the neighborhood. His heart opened and he started being kind to him. I saw a man who didn't want a mangy feral cat coming around his door. He wanted to boot the cat until he realized that the cat came to open his heart. And so you see a cat saving a man's life. You see a trans person teaching him forgiveness. These are all lessons because he had a conversation with what was right in front of him. Not saying it should be a certain way. No, it's never going to be the way you think it. So I look at human history, whatever I recall of it, and see the good and the bad. And as I look, I wait again for this divine word. So though each of the persons that I am living with in my life, God breaks into my life through all. It's all the divine expressing. You know, the little snake by the garden pathway, when it slithers in front of you, he's not an evil creature coming to bite you. He's just a little snake who's trying to find a place to lay her eggs so that she can be a mother too. God breaks into my life. What is he doing? What is he saying? I ask myself. I am careful not to rush to conclusions or to put it into words. Rather, I wait until it is given to me in a language that I can understand, in a language that comes from the silence. Huh. So could we have a relationship to this something, Emily, that's speaking to us through the wisdom of our heart, and it speaks to the soul, and it doesn't come necessarily in concrete ideas. It comes in felt visions like the grass blowing in the wind. So he says, I am careful not to rush. I do the same with life events, the joyful ones and the painful ones. Have you discovered that the painful ones are necessary? I hope you've discovered that. We're not just here to have fun. Girls just wanna have fun. No, it's not about having fun. It's knowing that they call, you know, there's pain. I remember Tom Costa said, the reason they have the owl in growth because sometimes it hurts to grow. That's supposed to be funny. I do the same with life's events, the painful ones, the joyful ones, the sensational ones, and the simple day-to-day events. The number is way too large. He said, I could choose to merely see what happened yesterday or today. For from the moment I awoke, and even while I slept, God has never ceased to act and has never ceased to reveal herself. She's always exposing herself to us. So are we listening? Are we tuning in? Are we allowing this divine creative intelligence to create through us, to express through us, to play music through us, to dance through us. Bob came in and he was playing that honky-tonk. What was his name? Scott Joplin. And I found myself dancing all over the church, because how can you not dance when you hear that honky-tonk kind of music? So I search, hoping that my eyes will see and that my heart will understand. Or I ask that even itself, could you speak to me and help me understand when I don't, when I feel disconnected? Before I end my quest, he says, I pray. Here's a priest. I pray that the Lord will give me light, the lumina naturae, the lumina dei, the light of nature and the light of spirit are the same light, and we're beings of light. In the lovely little book, Awakening the World, Llewellyn talks about the axis of light is waking up on the planet, and this is the light of love, and it's guiding us. It brought you to Alabama. The light of love did. So he says, I pray that it give me light to always understand the scriptures that are written today in the gospel of life. Not that I had the light to understand what was given in the Bible 2,000 years ago. No, I want to be able to read the scripture of life and understand it in a deeper way. My life and every single thing around me teaches me and shows me the way. My life and every single thing around me teaches me and shows me the way. So then could we enjoy the teacher, knowing that the teacher is everywhere, that life is the great teacher. And then I hear Llewellyn Bunley again, my spiritual teacher, another one of them, who says the outer teacher, if they're worth anything, must take you to the inner teacher. But he concludes, the greatest teacher of all is life itself. So could we have a conversation with life as it moves us ahead, and the evolutionary thrust, and in his book, Awakening the World, he says, we need a global dimension to our spiritual practice. He talks about the collective energy. When enough of us, it's that 100th monkey thing, can awaken to our divinity, something will shift here on planet Earth. It's not about the individual. It's never been about the individual. It's been about community. It's about collective energy coming together in a quantum field. So here's what he says in this lovely book, Awakening the World, which I've taught several times. I'm just absolutely in love with it. He says, we need to make an inner commitment to the spiritual life of the whole, that's W-H-O-L-E. As the Sufi sayings say, it is the consent which draws down the grace. When we say yes to this life that we've been given, that's when the grace unfolds. We say yes in the midst of my turmoil. I say yes to the grace. It takes consent. This too is good. This too is for God. And I demand to see the blessing. And guess what? You will see it, even if it's a painful experience. So what if it says it requires our consent? He says this, the lover has tasted the transformative nature of his love. Now, it's all about the lover and the beloved. We are the lover, and the beloved is the beloved, but the lover and the beloved are one. So when you get to know that we're having a love affair with the universe, and that the beloved has given all of this to you, Sylvia, it's not about your two beautiful children and Dr. Penny Lobenthal. No, it's all your lover. The beloved's everywhere. And we want to make it special. There's no special love. So he says, the lover has tasted the transformative nature of his love, her love, and has known its potential. And what can be given to the individual, he says, can be given to the world. And it is one of the secrets of global unity, the emerging state of global awareness. Global unity. And then he talks about the collective and coming together and this evolutionary process and spiritual groups, and the necessity of spiritual groups. Phil, you'll have to read this because you'll love it. And then skipping over to the spiritual groups thing and the axis of love, here we go. The world spins on its axis of love. Even Arabi says, love is the principle of existence and its cause as well. It is the beginning of the world, and it is also what maintains the world. So could we experience that love? Dr. Holmes, all is love and all is law. Let love lead the way. How are you going to experience the love if you don't surrender to it? It's what you are. It's the compelling power of the universe. We want to make it special and have a special love. And there's nothing wrong with special love, but you can get trapped in special love. But when you have a love that's universal, oy vey, that's the axis of love awakening. The axis of love runs through all creation, carrying the energy of love to every atom of creation. Don't you love this bigger picture, Miss Emily? That you are divine love in manifestation? So you don't even do the Reiki. You open to the love, and the love flows through you. And the law of attraction will bring it wherever it's needed. The axis of love sings the song of her creation. I changed the gender because it's Mother's Day. The axis of love sings the song of her creation, the joy of her manifestation, and the real wonder of her world. It is the axis of she loves them and they love her. That's a beautiful phrase from the Quran. She loves them and they love her. You take one step toward the beloved comes running toward you. Could we have an intimate relationship with this invisible something, Michael? And it's not about finding the right and perfect her. It's about the big her that you're holding in your hand. So I gave him the Divine Mother. In gravitational pull of her love holds life together, and it gives meaning and sustenance to all of creation. It is a very powerful core of energy that nourishes life more when we realize it and we converse with it. He's asking us to have a conversation with this something that's accessible. It's accessible. You know, I love some of the paintings we have in the center because they speak from the soul, and you can feel the soul coming out through these paintings. What if we get to, he says, oh, he's quoting the Quran. I was a hidden treasure, and I longed to be loved, so I created the world. This is Allah speaking in the Quran. I was a hidden treasure, and I longed to be known, so I created the world. So what if this power wants to know itself by revealing itself through its creation, and you are that creation, unfolding, expressing, unveiling herself as art, as magic, as beauty, as truth, as love, as compassion and gentleness. Okay, he says, the axis of love is most directly accessible through the heart, because the heart is our organ of divine perception. It's the organ of divine love, and it is through our heart that we are aligned with the center of our being and with the axis of love that runs through all creation. And through those who love her, whose hearts she has awakened, her love flows into the world, and the axis of love is constantly present. So we see her face in the beauty of the chaos, in the chaos. We see it in the summer sunrise, as well as in the rush hour traffic. Love is within us, and it's within everything we meet. Could we commune with it and experience its universality? It's not something separate and far away in a place called heaven, but it's something, as they say in the Quran, as intimate as your jugular vein. That's how close it is. It's right there, always already waiting for us to have a relationship with it. So I decided to close with a man's journey through the mother. And this is a pattern that happened, it's happened all over the world. Well, we'll take people, this is the indigenous people up in Canada, and they took them from childhood away from their mothers and their families and put them in these schools to try to reprogram the Indian out of them. And you had many, many disasters come from that experiment. And this is the story of a man named Chief Robert Joseph, in the book Nam Way Out, where he was healed, just like you were, Cindy, by the mother. By going to nature, she healed him, and he began to listen to life. He wasn't an unworthy Indian. He was a sacred being. And so this word Nam Way Out, he describes what it means. When we speak the word Nam Way Out, we are talking about the forests as our family, the animals, and those that fly, and those that swim in the ocean, and the things that we can't see or feel or touch within spirit, that which is everywhere and that which is also nowhere. This is what Nam Yam Wat is. It's the everything. It's the allness of spirit. So Nam Yam Wat is one simple little word. It is an old-fashioned greeting, but this world also evokes the universe and the universal. This work evokes the music of the interconnected, the everything that we are together, all of the elements, all of the dimensions of what we know, and all of what we do not know. So could we surrender to something that is the knower within? David doesn't have a clue, and I guarantee nobody out here has a clue. But Source does. So could we yield to that greater intelligence and listen? That's being embraced by life itself. And he closes his journey, and it's all about reconciliation. All those unhealed parts of us, it goes back to Bruce Lipton, the subconscious needs to be healed. The unloved child needs to be mothered by all of us mothers. And so he closes the end of this with a prayer. And I'm going to invite us to take this as a prayer for our planet, because it's so beautiful. Reconciliation is a spiritual covenant that we all get to do. So I invite you to take this for yourself in the first person. He said, let us call in our highest self, our human consciousness, and in wanting something larger, better for all of us, not just for me. Let us remember that in spirit of what we have done to ourselves, we belong here, and to know that we are loved. So let us always know that love is the foundation of everything in this universe, for the world around us, for our families, and for our own self. Let us call in this spirit and witness her and hear each other's stories of pain or joy, of hope and possibility. Let us listen with an open heart to the conversations of life. Let us take on a responsibility for each other and to each other, and let our every action be in the highest interest of our collective good. Our collective good, not about mine anymore, but can I be here for the collective good of the one? Let us create the magic of the universe for our children and welcome all children into the fold with a constant and abiding love, because they're all our children, Michael, all of them, even the four-leggeds. Let us align people together, even if it's for merely a second or for an instant or perhaps for an hour or a day. And in that, connect our energies, our hearts, our minds, and our souls. We need soulful connections, Miss Barbara, because the soul is the field where we know oneness. The soul knows oneness. Let us, every faith, every color, every creed, recognize our common humanity. Let us accept this truth, that we are all one, and that there is only one here, endlessly unveiling herself anew. And so with that, Jan, would you like to ring the bell for me? And so with his beautiful prayer for all of us, there's this invitation to open to an expanded field of awareness, to listen deeply to the wisdom of the soul as it comes through the silence and the abiding peace, the exquisite hope and possibility of love flowering on planet Earth, knowing that this seed idea cannot see the flower in manifestation, but we can trust and know that the flower of love's expression is potentiated by our willingness to say yes, to consent. This life belongs to you, beloved. Do with it as you will. And so in that abject surrender and trust, we open ourselves to the guidance from within, and ironically from without, because the universe has never stopped speaking. And so the birds have a message, and the trees have a message, and our history has a message. If we don't learn from our history, we're doomed to repeat it. And so could we claim the gift of growth as we navigate the tides of change in this long life that we've been given, so that we don't continue to create the same struggle or hardship once we know that we participate in the level of success or failure by the choices that we make. So we choose this day to embrace the facts of life with a jubilant and beholden heart. And in that joyful, grateful perception, we see the good, the God, revealing herself in new creative ways to assist us in assuming a new consciousness, so that this emerging life of evolution and possibility can unfold within and all around. Each of us is an instrument for the divine in the most organic,
collective, coordinated way that we are woven into a tapestry of the one life, and we get to celebrate it. We sing a song at the end, I am you, you are me, we are one. Those aren't just words that we throw out, but they're deep held knowing that in this unity, we will live in harmony, and out of that harmony, peace comes, and we rejoice and are glad in it. So with a smile on your lips, I'm going to ask Gigi and Kelly to pass the plate. And Bob is going to play a little song for us as we make a circle.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.